welcome everyone to the Film Vault. I'm Brian Bishop, your host for today. Oh, we got some reviews coming at you. We got a couple of assigned films, Finding Francis. Yes, thank you very much. The Hidden Fortress, as well as Athena, and the film that the Oscar-nominated film that put me to sleep twice in the theater. And I'll be not Athena. There is a Oscar-nominated film that put me to sleep twice in the theater. I'll be telling you about that. Well, warning you about that also.
Yeah, you'll be warning us about that also. So you think anyone fell asleep to Athena in the theater? Like they're coming down from some druggies, right? If that's the case,
I don't know much about Athena.
Oh, you haven't seen Athena?
No.
Fuck out of here!
You didn't tell me to.
I mean, you should have.
Probably.
Did you hear me talking about how much I loved it?
That's why I didn't.
It's a feat, Brian. It's a feat. It's a feat. Yeah, we're coming to you live on tape from my old abode, from my kitchen, as it were. Usually I like to do these in the garage, but I have some projects going on in the garage right now. Plus, it's a little cold for my friend Bri Bri.
I get cold easily.
You really do get cold easily these days. So,
thought it'd be nice. What are you going to the garage?
Set up
here. Are you dissolving a body?
No, I'm like listing stuff and reorganizing stuff. And there's just stuff everywhere. Okay. You know, as garages without cars end up being looking like quite often. So, also...
Can we talk about the great coincidence of doing this in the morning in your breakfast nook with the top five coming up later this week?
That is true. Today, as we record this, it's Valentine's Day, and we're going to do it normally, like as we normally do, Tuesday evening. And Brian's like, oh, no, it's Valentine's Day. I must be with my love, my sweet, sweet love.
I didn't care so much about that. I just don't want to get in trouble.
I get you. I hear that.
Am I off?
My wife, she's pretty cool with the whole... However, sometimes she shows me up. Like last night, she decided to go out and get some stuff for our boy, for the six-year-old, and then she got me some stuff too. And I'm like, oh, no. So I had to go out this morning and do a little bit extra.
Understood.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing because, like, I don't know. I feel more responsibility to get Tessa stuff than I think Christy does. But then you probably don't feel as much responsibility to get Atticus stuff.
Oh, I got Atticus nothing on Valentine's
Day. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I feel like it's the one that I can kind of take off as far as he's concerned.
You know, I got her a card, a Valentine's Day card, that has like a puzzle sticker puzzle. You know, he's got the sticker and it's like an activity and a card. Two in one.
You're very proud of that.
I'm just looking at my shoulder, patting myself on the back.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I'm excited to talk to you about some of these movies today. I want to reiterate the fact that we are 20 years into this since we first sat down behind a microphone, even though there's a number of years after we first sat down wisely that we didn't do that again for a while.
True.
But then we did a few demos, but then got actually started doing it professionally about 4 short years, Brian, after we sat down first.
I must say, speaking of the history of the Film Vault, I'm chipping away at Mitch Burns and Giovanni's 6-hour opus about the history of the Film Vault.
Yeah.
Some minor mistakes, but then nothing is going to change the overall arc.
The mistakes, I would imagine, are Gio taking all the credit for the show existing at all.
Oh, no, that's true. That part actually is true.
He's starting to edge towards, like, I'm the one who called Brian and said, you should sit down with this guy Anderson and you should begin talking behind microphones about movies. He credits himself with, you know, a lot of it is very true. A lot of it is true, but I feel like maybe some of it he delves into lore.
No, I disagree.
Oh, okay.
He did it all.
All right. Oh, okay.
We're not doing the show right now. This is Giovanni.
This is Giovanni. He's got his hands up both of our asses.
That's right.
Yes. Eraserhead.
Yes.
Will be watched by us and Giovanni as well. He's usually there on the live
That's
show.
Right. On the watch along. Yeah.
Wednesday the 22nd.
That'll be nice.
We'll be watching that here right over there. If you're watching on video
feet,
right now,
we'll feet away from here.
Watching right around the corner there. This is a movie that I hope my son does not come out and watch because I don't want him thinking that
it's about a loving father.
His dad's insane or that Brian's insane. But yeah, so far I've already heard from a few of you who have said that they have not been able to get through this movie or they have not ever taken the dive to watch this movie. And they think that this is the perfect venue to do so. So yeah, we're going to have a good time with this one. We're going to get through it, and we're going to have some little fun facts about it, and everyone will be able to say that they have seen Eraserhead once we are done.
I don't know if you can say you've seen it with our stupid asses talking over it.
Eraserhead. There's a lot of room to talk, though.
That's true. There's a lot of room for contemplation.
It's a fine line, too. Like, I would rather someone watch Eraserhead with us yabbing, gabbing,
okay,
you know, than not watch it at all.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Fair. Yeah, sure.
Also, next week, we're going to be doing top five Jewish characters, Brian, or top five Jews is another way to put it. Jonathan Moser's choice. He's the decider next week, so we'll be
doing
that.
Please tell me Jonathan's Jewish. This is going to be a weird fetish.
I don't know. We'll find out. I don't know if it's a fetish, right? And then Emily Hood has assigned us I Want You Back, which is kind of a lovey-dovey romantic comedy, okay. I guess, which she wanted to have happen this week, but she dropped the ball and didn't remind me. And then Jonathan Oxhorn, the one and only, our own Jonathan Oxhorn, has us watching Tokyo Godfathers next week.
Oh, my God. Please send me all this.
I will. And then we will have a couple other movies. So we're going to be doing four movies again. If you can handle it. If you can handle it.
I'm all about it, bro.
I'm also going to be talking about Hit the Road this week. I don't know if you're familiar with the Iranian film Hit the Road. It's a road trip movie.
Is that an Iranian film?
It's an Iranian film, yes. A lot of reading going on when you're watching that one, Hit the Road. It was on a lot of top 10 lists. Critics really are enjoying this.
I think I saw like some buzz about this, but it did get nominated for an international feature, as far as I know.
It did not. Okay, I don't even know at this point. I don't pay attention to.
That's all I pay attention.
I pay less attention. Maybe it's because I'm kind of leaning on you because I know you're all up in the Oscars biz. But like I pay less attention now than I ever have before. All right, and then what else? What else? What else? Oh, have we done self surgeries? I know we've done surgeries, but we did self surgeries, right? DIY surgeries.
We did DIY, so that would be self surgeries. Yes, we did that.
Okay, I thought so. Somebody was asking, they were pitching it, and I said, I know we've done, because I remember my number one and what it was. I'm not going to say it here, but it was like the ultimate self surgery. It involved a beheading by oneself.
Oh,
and it wasn't.
Is it a title? It's in Latin.
It was not Tenebra Lux.
Oh, it was
a different one. No. And then also, I want to pitch this as a top five in the future, Brian, before we get into the fan fictions and whatnot. Absurd abodes. I don't know how to word this, but you know where you're watching a movie. It used to happen a lot, especially in the 80s. You're watching a movie about like maybe a growing paper boy or something. A man, usually it's a guy, who can barely make ends meet. He's really, really hurting, and he lives like in Manhattan, like in a...
Oh, sure. Yes. I don't know if that's worth a top five, but then that is funny where you're like... I was thinking about that. Tessa was watching The Phantom Menace yesterday against my wishes. And at one point, Anakin's little friends come up to him, and they're all fellow slaves too in Tatooine. And one girl has braces. Mm-hmm. Now, look, I know Lucas wanted to get his daughters in there. I totally understand. But the idea that slaves on Tatooine would be privy to a dentist, let alone orthodonture, is absurd. And there's along the lines of what you're talking about.
So
it's a crazy circumstance.
It's a galaxy far, far away. Maybe the dentists are treated a little bit differently over there.
Maybe there's a Dentist Without Borders that go from planet to planet.
Perhaps. Yeah. You don't know. That's a little different, but I know what you're saying. But yeah, there's so many, especially like I said in the 80s, where they were just afraid to show poverty or something. Like they were afraid to show someone roughing it.
And yeah, like there were a lot of like...
especially the rom-coms. They're
teachers
really
or artist types who lived in these incredible lofts in Manhattan.
It's always like, a loft.
That's 8,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Yes, we did self-surgeries in January of 2016.
All right, and then this week we're doing top five breakfasts, which Brian already suggested and said. And that was a topic that was brought to the program by me.
Prometheus says, good choice.
I brought that in. You giving yourself a pat on the back?
Yeah, I look back on my list sometimes. I'm like, oh, that is a good choice.
Okay, Jesus Christ. All right, here we go. Because we're doing this right in the middle of the workday, Avery is not capable of being here. Ugh. So I will be doing the fan flictions thanks to Mitch Burns, who, you know what? He sent something else too, which I'm a little bit afraid to open. He says, open on the show. There's an MP3 involved. I don't know. It's a lot of work for me when I'm self-producing over here. All right, here we go. This is a little sampling of what some of you, the listener, has been watching in the last week since we talked to you. Sherm ND on Twitter to Leslie. The Riceboro performance is as good as advertised, and overall, it was an enjoyable watch.
Controversial.
But at times, it felt a bit cookie-cutter, art-house indie in how it was paced, edited, and structured. The protagonist's arc didn't feel entirely earned. I've heard the controversy about how they feel like she didn't go through the appropriate traditional steps to
although it wasn't
campaign.
Her, supposedly. It was friends, so I guess she's off the hook that way. Because remember, they banned someone from the Academy for doing
that. Was
this
a little dirtier, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Years
he was
ago.
He kind of did his own grassroots campaign.
Well, he was also, he had like the ears of a bunch of people.
Yes, because he used to be
it was the music
chairman or president of that division. You know, like it was clearly a little insider baseball.
Cody Horton on Facebook saw Pamela, a love story. The doc itself doesn't reinvent the wheel, but Pam is so engaging and candid about everything that you can't help but like her and the film itself. Okay. It's good to know. Adam Evan Galley on Facebook. Why am I reading this? You should be reading this.
No, I because I don't have it.
I just finished Marmaduke as part of my yearly quest to not only watch all the prestigious award
Marmaduke
noms, but the Razzies as well. Ballsy guy.
Wow, look at that.
I can safely say this is not only one of the worst movies of the year, but one of the worst I've ever seen in my life. This is
I wasn't aware that it even came out.
Marmaduke we're talking about. So many cringe moments and just horrible decisions made, from scripting to voice performance to action direction to animation design to actual animation.
Just the concept. Like, what kid is enamored with the film or the comic strip about a Great Dane?
Literally nothing works in this movie. 1 out of 10. Hey, kids like Great Danes. They like giant dogs.
I feel like Marmaduke's time has eclipsed. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm saying. I don't know how relevant
to bring him back.
I guess so.
The Tommy Miller on Instagram, Titanic for the first time. It was pretty good. Andrea Shaw. How are you, Andrea? This is the last one. Here we go. Women talking. I thought it was absolutely breathtaking, and I'm beyond confused that none of these women are up for acting awards. Sounds like it.
Women talk. I've seen it. We'll talk about it soon. Women talking is a lot of things. I wouldn't call it breathtaking. Mm. My breath was never taken.
Well, I can't trust you with some of your choices.
Okay, that's true.
Recently, you're starting to delve back into to troubled territory.
Oh, what does that mean?
I don't know. Just like your reaction to After Sun last week was upset. Continues to be upsetting. Your love of the ending of Vengeance troubles me.
Yeah,
you've had I've been talking. I'm not giving names, but I've been talking to somebody, emailing back and forth via email with somebody who's worked on Vengeance. It was another one of these movies that got shut down because of COVID, and he remembers the ending being different originally.
Okay,
and I do think that something happened where they wrote an absurd ending just to get it done, just to have it, because principles may not have been available. Maybe the set pieces weren't available. I feel like they mailed in.
No, that's like a good woman.
I'm talking about Ashton Kutcher and BJ Novak. Oh my God. Yeah, see, trouble me.
I didn't love the ending to that.
Yeah, you were into it. You thought it worked. You thought it was great.
Mm-hmm. Did I? I don't think I did.
I'm pretty sure you did.
I don't remember that. I remember liking the ending to, what was the one? The guy who shoots holes in his wall, in his door.
What? After Midnight.
Yeah. That one worked.
That was, and we were flipped on the ending of that one. Hey, what'd you do for the Super Bowl? You go to a big party?
It's a strange question on your behalf, but yeah, I went to a small party at a friend's house. I think it was five couples and so many kids.
A lot of kids.
I think it was like 10 adults and 12 kids. It was horrible. It was awful. What about you?
I just sat at home with the wife and the boy, and I didn't care.
Really?
I didn't care about the Super Bowl because I don't watch football.
It's more about the gathering, right? It's more about the...
But I wasn't gathering. I was with the people that I'm always with. I wasn't dragging them to some Super Bowl party. So we started to watch it a little bit, and I couldn't take all the pomp and circumstance. I was just getting more and more angry and more because it's such... They know that everyone's watching, so they have to just maximize the capital, the capital, the money that's so much, sponsorship, obviously,
everything's brought to you by something.
But then as soon as they do
now
that,
the
they go
that brought to you by,
they flip and they're like, look at how great we are. And we care about this and we care about that. Now more money, buy this. Well, look at how wonderful we are. We're such humanitarians. It's just, I could not take it. So
it's both a complete sellout and self-aggrandizing.
Exactly. It's both those things. And I don't really, care about either team because I don't watch football. So I'm like, why are we watching this, guys? And Atticus is like, I'd really like to watch the original Mighty Ducks. So I did maybe the most hipster thing that I've done in a long time. We watched not only one, but two Mighty Ducks during the Super Bowl. I did watch the last the last hour and a half of the game. So about halfway through the third quarter.
It ended up being a close, exciting game.
It's always such a letdown. Like the final play is like, okay, that's it. It's just, there's something that lacks the excitement of some of the other sports for the end of the game.
Interesting.
Especially when it ends with a kick. It's like, what are we doing?
Yeah. I found it to be an exciting, engaging game. Again, with not much at stake besides some prop bets.
anyways, this the point is that I saw Mighty Ducks 2, which I, you know, it's beloved. I love that film. I was wrong.
Not a good film.
Oh my God. I knew it was silly. I knew it was a bit of a guilty pleasure, but
I think it's more reviewed.
There are so many things very, very, very wrong with this
movie.
Did
Atticus like it?
He did. Okay. He liked it a lot. Do you know there's a Confederate flag in that movie? On the Texas kid? He's just cruising around with a patch on his...
I didn't know that. I haven't seen it. Probably... I don't know if I've ever seen it, but I think I saw it when it came out.
What do you call points in baseball?
Runs.
Yeah. What would you say if you were watching a baseball movie and like the coach had a long storied history of playing baseball and making it to the pros even, and he referred to runs as points?
I'd say that there was a serious problem with the script supervisor.
How does no one catch that? It's not the script supervisor's problem. They're not going to stand up and say, I feel like this is...
I think anyone should be empowered.
Somebody on set should have said, no, we don't call them
like
points.
The lowly grip, be like, Gordon Bombay. I play in a league on the weekends. And
embarrassing. I don't remember seeing that. The Bash Brothers were great, but my God. I was thinking this might be worthy of a watch-along at points, just how bad it is.
Let's do it.
Going to the inner city where they pluck Kenan Thompson to be on their team, but nobody else. And all the black kids are like behind the fence going, go do it for USA. It's just a cringe.
Let's, by the way, I've long fantasized that
I can't believe that I said that. I love that movie.
I've long fantasized that we should do top five cringiest lines or moments. I think lines is good, but, let's pencil it in somewhere down the road.
Pencil it.
I've been thinking about it. I got three or four already.
You ready to talk a little moves?
I don't know why we should start now.
I know it's a little late in the program. Should we not do this week?
That's right. Let's just skip it. Talk about Valentine's Day.
Where do you want to start?
Breakfast.
We're not going to line up on too many things. I'll start real. Well, no, I just talked a whole shit ton. Let go. What do you got? What can you recommend people to watch?
What can I recommend? You know what? I'll start here because you flickfest this just a little while ago. I caught up on it. I'm going to give you a break because you've already made your thoughts known, and I'll jump on and say that I also enjoyed Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. Pinocchio 2022, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, directed by the titular Guillermo del Toro and Mark Gustafson. This is sitting at, Gregory Mann is the voice of... the titular Pinocchio. Ewan McGregor voices in this. David Bradley, Christoph Waltz, Tilda Swinton, and Kate Blanchett also lend their voices to this project. 97% Rotten Tomatoes streaming on Netflix. This is currently the favorite to win Best Animated Feature at the Oscars this year.
How is Mad God not up for Best Animated Feature? What's the matter? The Academy can go fuck themselves. How about that?
I only know the films that are nominated. I don't know anything else.
Mad God took 30 years to make. This man put his heart and soul into it. And it's like nothing you've ever seen before, stop motion animation. And they're like, yeah, pass.
Speaking of stop motion, the stop motion is pretty breathtaking.
Mm.
Breathtaking.
Where the ladies talking?
It's well done. It's very well done. I got to imagine they had a huge team working on this, unlike probably Mad God.
It was a tiny little team.
Oh, it was a tiny team. Yeah, it was like two people. That totally defies me.
Did you watch some of the making of stuff with it?
I did watch a little.
Pretty good. That pretty one awesome. Scene took 3 months to make. The one where the monkey is the taking him over to the carnival. Yeah, Jillian heard that. She was in the kitchen when she heard that. She was infuriated. And I tend to agree. She's like, no team should be working for 3 months on anything that doesn't actually, you know, contribute to like clean water or helping communities. I'm like, yeah, you know what? You kind of got a point.
That's actually a valid point. That's a point of view that I can get behind.
Because that scene could have been done without 3 months worth of work. It seems a little...
a little egregious. That said, they'll probably walk away with the Oscar at this point for Best Animated Feature. I wasn't expecting all the religious themes. There were a lot of
I'm wooden and so is Jesus. Does that make us brothers?
And this was also a true adaptation because the original book by Carlo Collodi, my great uncle, was released and set in 1883. This is set against the backdrop of World War II in the 19, I'm guessing, early 1940s, late 1930s. You get a lot of Mussolini. There's even Hitler salutes, you know, an Aryan youth.
Oh, there is Nazi kids. Yeah.
Yeah. There's Nazi kids. It's a true adaptation. I was overall very pleasantly surprised to get a true fresh take on Pinocchio. Because, you know, we're all familiar with the classic cartoon, the one that came out last year that wasn't very good.
That was this year. Oh, that was last year. It was the same year. That's why this one's called Guillermo del Toro. It's just to differentiate from Tom Hanks'
abortion. To have like a real actual, like, I wouldn't call it original, but I would call it a refreshing take on the Pinocchio story that we all know was lovely. You mentioned Sebastian the Cricket, who kept a running joke of getting smashed every time he'd start to launch into a song.
Yeah.
That was good.
That was really funny, right? Every time he'd start to launch into a song, something would happen for the most part.
He would endure some trauma.
And it really worked. That worked for me, that particular bit did, because I'm like, every time, I don't know about you, but every time a character in a Disney movie begins to launch into a song, something inside of me just goes,
you'd like them to be smashed.
It just crumples up. And then when I see the smashing, it like just opens back up. I'm like, all right, I'm back in.
And the recurring thing where he died and went, were they playing poker, the whatever it was? It was enjoyable.
Yeah, I think we talked a little bit about Cate Blanchett, right? What's funny is because when he first met the life angel or wherever she was, I thought it was Cate Blanchett. And then when he met the death angel, I'm like, God, that might be Cate Blanchett. It turns out neither one of them were Cate Blanchett. Both of them were Tilda Swinton because she had already been cast in both roles to play like essentially the good witch and the bad witch.
Right.
But Cate Blanchett had been begging to be in this movie.
Oh, I didn't know.
So she was the voice of the monkey. She said, I'll take whatever you got.
She just made the squeaks and the whatever. Yeah.
And she put her all into it. And she was recording. She was doing some of those voice recordings while shooting Tar, which delights me.
I mean, if they're in the studio.
It's just funny that she's acting like Lydia Tar in one part of her day. And then she's squeaking like a monkey. Later that day.
Very enjoyable. If Tessa was fairly engaged, I think it was a little... not intense, just a little, adult for her. So she wasn't, she loves the original Pinocchio. So your violence may vary, but fun for the whole family.
Yeah, it is a little dark, but it wasn't too dark for my guy or Tessa. So take that for what it's worth. All right, I saw a film that came out last year. Hit the Road is what it's called. It's an Iranian film. I saw this on Hoopla. I think you can rent it if you're not a Hoopla subscriber, which everyone should be, because all you need is a... library card. So,
is this up for an Oscar?
Panah Panahi is the writer director of this Iranian road film. I mean, it's right there in the title. It's a family on the road to say farewell to their eldest son who's leaving the nest to go to college and to go abroad. I don't even know if they go into detail exactly where he's going, but we get a lot of us are familiar with this, especially the empty nesters amongst us. I don't know how many of you are listening, but the big send off for your child when they leave the house.
God, I can't wait.
And that's this. However, it's much different in Iran, but that's pretty much where there's one thing that's specifically different that they don't get to till towards the end of the movie, which I don't even need to give away. But everything else is so remarkably familiar. And,
it's universal.
Most of us in the West don't have a great idea other than what we see in, news headlines and accounts. And, unless we've been embedded over in far reaches of the world, we don't know what the culture is like unless we've read a whole lot. So this is a great...
We in the U.S. are famously insulated.
And ignorant, to a lot of things. So this is
that's mean.
Another great, walk in the mile of shoes. Take a look, slice of life, and it's this family. So it's they got this young kid. He's probably 6 or 7. He's a total psycho. He's just an annoying child. He's always on. He's cute at times, but other times,
top 5 shitty kids.
You're like, we're just like, shut it down, kid. Shut it down. So he's in the car. It opens up with him playing. They have very sorrowful music throughout this. However, this is a comedy for sure. So it opens up with this piano track score, and you see the kid playing the piano to the tune. I don't know if he's actually hitting the right notes, but there's a piano drawn on a large cast that's in the back of this car, and the kid is hitting it's lining up with the piano, which is melodic, so
still
it's
on the beat.
Yeah, he's hitting the beat, but I don't know if they did the music afterwards or they played it for him and they did a bunch of, and then it pulls back and we see that his father, who's a gray bearded man, and he's in the back seat with a big cast on his leg, and it's a road trip, and the mom is sitting up front, and the eldest son, who's probably late teens, early 20s, he's outside the car, and they got a dog too. So we got the psycho kid, we got the dad who couldn't give less of a fuck throughout this entire thing. He's great. The dog is dying, a worried mom, and the older brother is a traveler, which we find out later that they refer to them as travelers, people that are leaving the country to be educated elsewhere. And they're about to, they're so the movie is slow. It's quiet, but it's got some really, really fun bits in it. Okay. And I can't recommend this to everyone. This is not a gripping movie. However, the characters are great. I saw this just yesterday, so I don't know how fair I'm being to it, because I don't know if it's going to resonate or stick with me for very long. But just seeing the similarities in how we are all, we're all just people. And it's great to see this in such a easily accessible. There's no very little political talk about okay. it. Pretty, also, there's that. You know, so many of these movies that actually do well
right.
and get attention, it's about, you know, political strife sure. and...
suffering and, or you know, some kind of message.
There's messages in here for sure, but most of it is just, hey, look at this family going across country, or you know, taking a long road trip. And I really enjoyed that. You have okay. to be in the right mood for this. Here's a little flavor of the humor. And it's very quiet, but this kid, the little psycho kid, they come along some cyclists, right? And they're right driving alongside this one cyclist, and he's, you know, decked out like he's Lance Armstrong, and the kid's like, "You a champion?" And they're talking to the guy, and the guy bails, and it's never decided whether they hit him or not, but they stop the car, and he's down back behind the street, and then they get his car, his bike in the car, and they give him a ride. Right. And he's talking about Lance Armstrong and how he's, you know, inspired. And then there was a whole conversation about Lance Armstrong.
Is this contemporary,
Armstrong.
I should ask?
Yeah.
It's like set today.
It's set today. Yeah. There's a long discussion with the father who can give less of a fuck about everything that's going on, seemingly, even though that's kind of a red herring, that, you know, Lance Armstrong's a cheat and this and that. And then the guy, the bicyclist, a cyclist, is getting more and more annoyed. And he ducks down to get some nuts that fell on the ground at one point as they're passing the other cyclist. And then he goes, all right, my house is up here. And they're like, we don't see any houses. So yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it. So they drop that guy off. And the family's like, that's weird. There's no houses or anything. And the guy just takes off. Obviously, he's just cheating. Right.
Right.
And he used the family to cheat. And it's never mentioned again.
Good.
Right. And they never recognize it. They never say, hey, he was cheating. Just that kind of subtlety throughout this movie. This is really a cool trick shot towards the end, where it looks like the father and the youngest son are floating in space with these lights. And there's a great conversation about 2001. I shouldn't say great, but a quick little discussion from the oldest son talking about 2001 and how it's otherworldly and how it allows you to traverse through the galaxy, which I think,
appreciate that.
I think that they're also saying that about this film and
true.
In many ways. So
about
hit
film
the road.
In general.
And film in general, exactly.
I should point out there's a streaming on Showtime in addition to Canopy and Hoopla and all that.
Oh, yeah, Showtime doesn't count for me because I don't currently have a membership.
No,
that's why I...
Shows the service.
Yeah, thank you very much for letting the listeners know. Athena's the sexiest pick of the week, which we'll be getting to in a moment here,
my
too.
God, so many movies.
I know, a lot of movies. So hit the road. Hit the road.
Hey, a little preview or a little teaser for the top five this week, Top 5 Breakfast. I don't know if you remember. You probably don't, because if you're like me,
I forgot.
Things you talk about on the air, you forget more or less instantly. And I was listening to a Laughter Disaster on the way here with you and Karana.
Smart move.
And you specifically alluded to and described a scene that I thought I was so clever for digging up on my top five. You were like, "Yeah, funny scene." I'm like, "It is a funny scene." I can't
believe
you thought
it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, we're gonna get to it, but it's on my top five.
Oh wait, I brought up a scene that you're going to talk about on the next episode, and I brought this up on the After Disaster
because you were doing research and you're like, "I came across this scene, very funny." I'm like,
"How
is
that?
How on earth did you
pertain to what's happening right now?"
Because you were talking about funny scenes.
That's how your brain works.
That's right.
I don't understand.
And families.
And you were surprised that we landed on a similar scene that's funny?
I am
that we
surprised
both...
because it turns out, by the way, fruitful topic. There are a lot of
breakfast scenes? Oh, yeah. You could say a lot with a breakfast scene, Brian.
You can. I went into the week thinking like, oh, I can think of one or two. Mm-mm. And then I had quite the cornucopia.
We're going to do it all.
We're spread.
We've already done dinner scenes, right?
Pretty sure.
Yeah, we're going to do lunch scenes. We're going to do snack scenes. We're going to do midnight snack scenes. We're going to do nightcap scenes.
Brunch.
We're going to do it all. Brunch scenes. No, we're not going to do that. Well, who knows? We go long enough.
That's
for
right.
Another 20
That's
years,
right.
We may do
we'll be
that.
There eventually.
All right, Brian, what you got?
I don't really like movies, but I guess I can go ahead. Should I bring up one of our assigned movies? Yeah, let's do that.
Duh.
Which one did I like better? I liked them both, I'll be honest with you.
I want to keep, if I may, I would like to keep Nathan For You, Finding Francis, which is the series finale of Nathan For You for the end, because it is a series finale for a television program that ran
okay.
A few years ago, and also it's TV Vault.
Fair enough.
But it's absolutely worth talking about, and I absolutely love this movie.
Let's go in chronological order.
If you can call it that.
It's not a film. The Hidden Fortress was assigned to us. Oh, I don't have it here in front of me. Who assigned this to us?
This is Andrew Martin.
Thank you, Andrew.
Friend of the program. He's been around for a long time.
Andrew's a familiar name. Andrew's been around for a while.
I first met Andrew. He was a PA on Groupers.
Nice.
And I've said it before. I'll say it again. He was probably the hardest working guy on the set.
Was he there at the pool house?
Yes.
I probably met him then.
Yes.
I dropped in.
He was tasked with getting all that graffiti we had in the pool.
Getting it off.
He was tasked with getting it off, and it was not coming off. But Andrew did a damn good job so that we didn't get hit.
What did Andrew do? Spray with like some sort of like a goo gun?
I was off in the hills directing some other stuff, so I just heard that they were having big problems. When I came back, I saw that Andrew is still in. There's just so many things to do on set. But yeah, he was working hard.
I guess he could have repainted it, but that's a pain in the ass.
Andrew, I should also, while we're talking about Andrew, he also has an ongoing podcast called Andrew Watches Movies, which we've plugged here before. It's a semi-chaotic podcast. Is that what he meant to say? A semi-chaotic? It's all chaotic, I would imagine, if it's you, Andrew. Andrew talks to himself about movies. Very, very smart guy. Breaks down movies very well. Talks to himself about the movies he is watching and his personal response to them. For the month of February, he's given the show over to exploring black cinema and the movies that deserve more of a spotlight. Tune in for a personally curated podcast about film. That is Andrew Watches Movies. He assigned us The Hidden Fortress. Take it away, Brian.
This is a real blind spot for us. The Hidden Fortress, 1958, directed by Akira Kurosawa. 98% Rotten Tomatoes, obviously considered a classic. You can stream this on HBO or the Criterion Channel. I'm sure you can rent it across many platforms. This is a classic. Famously helped inspire Star Wars, and I wrote down a number of similarities in the story. There's the original script of Star Wars. And I don't know if I even knew this, didn't include either the Luke or Han Solo character. It was very much more similar to Hidden Fortress.
So it was Obi-Wan Kenobi the warrior?
Yeah, it was Kenobi and Leia. And then Kenobi rescuing Leia.
And then they found that old script, the original Kurosawa script, and they decided to make a Disney Plus show out of it called Obi-Wan.
That's probably That is actually very similar to the structure of the Hidden Fortress. Why was it called Obi-Wan? It should have been called a Young Leia.
I never watched it. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, it probably.
It's just a sign of sexism in our culture today, bro.
Features Young Leia. So this open.
They called it Sexy Young Leia. I bet they would have got all the nerds.
That would have been a little much because she's like 9.
I wish I didn't say that. I've never seen. 8. I don't know. So that doesn't. I'm sorry if that came off wrong. It was unintentional.
So many, many similarities of Star Wars. This opens with effectively a C-3PO and R2-D2 pair, two bickering friends traversing a barren landscape, and they then separate in anger, and they're reunited later by slave trade.
You're a shitworm.
That's right. Shitworm. Yeah. And it was interesting because I did a little research after the fact, of course, and reading about this movie, and it was interesting the way Kurosawa and later Lucas told their stories, quote, or to their retelling, they told this grand epic through the lowliest characters in this movie. They're just kind of rank and file.
They're peasants. You
know? Yeah. Well, they're in the military, right? Are they like not defectors, but they kind of
they're
escape
peasants
from their regiment.
They're the bottom of the barrel. Yeah. They're like the carpet feeders. Right. They're just trying to survive, and
they're trying to get back home.
They refer to themselves as peasants. That's numerous right. times, and they can kind of float in and out of things because they're almost like you don't even notice them.
Yeah, they're
nuisances.
Unless
you can use them for something to your liking. Did you mention that this is a 1958 film?
I did mention 1958.
Every line.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to have to ask you, when I assume this is set post-World War II. They never said what year it was, but everyone had guns. So like, that was at least in the 20th
century. I think it was turn of the century.
You think it was?
Yeah.
I always thought it was post-World War II.
I don't know. I could be wrong, but no, it seemed like, I mean, there was only, I didn't see one car.
No.
It was all horses.
So, but it's also set in the wilderness, essentially.
I was surprised when guns showed up. I thought it was like the 1700s until then.
Yeah, the modern weapon, I mean, modern-ish weaponry from 1950.
I should also mention the Ikaru, which we watched a few, probably a month or so ago, which Living is an American remake that's out and getting a lot of accolades this year. I think that Bill Nighy is up for best actor for that.
That's right.
That was based on the Kurosawa film Ikaru, which we just talked about last month. But that was also assigned to us by Andrew Martin.
Oh, Andrew assigned us that also? Nice.
Yeah. Every line in this movie, for the most, I'd say 95% of the lines are screamed.
Shouted. Screamed. Yes, I wrote that three quarters as well.
A lot of screaming. And I've seen Kurosawa. I've been, you know, very familiar with Kurosawa for quite some time. I've not seen all 31 of his movies or whatever it is, but I've seen, you know, like his, some of his top tier ones. I really like his aesthetic. I really like his style, as most people do. You'd be a fool not to. He tells a really good story. Ron, I mean, was, have you seen, you've seen Ron, right?
No.
Right. The Seven Samurais, you've seen that?
Yeah, sure, many times.
But the tone toggling is one of the hardest seen him do. And this is not the type of movie you can make today, I don't think, where they're asking so much of the audience to care about this and care about that and then go into just slapstick, pratfall, ridiculous humor. It was whiplash with the tone.
There's broad humor, where especially with the two characters we open with, who run throughout the movie. They're sort of an odd pairing, pairing by circumstance. You don't get the sense that they're really close friends, at least maybe not at the beginning. But their interaction is played for laughs. And then there's like sword battles to the death.
Yeah.
And or like spear battles.
And there's some great action in this, really, especially for the time. There's a horse chase scene, which I can absolutely see Lucas, Savine, you know, a bunch of filmmakers who came out from that era being completely smitten and blown away. And that coming into play with Star Wars yet again. That horse chase scene was like one of the best horse chase scenes I've seen.
All the action was well done. Even the humor for the era was
the humor was good. It was just, like I said, it was and... I went into it a little bit more with Andrew yesterday, who's seen the film a couple times. And I had some problems with some of the choices that the peasants ended up making, because I wanted to root for them, but then they did something so dastardly and conniving that I could no longer root for them by the time the movie was over. That said, very happy I'd seen this. Very glad to be able to talk about it with you a little bit. And
The titular fortress is actually a very small part of the movie.
Yeah, very small. Looking for it. It was almost distracting. The title was distracting. I'm like, all right, when are they going to find this hidden fort?
It kind of comes and goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's some fun stuff with the sticks and the gold and the greed of it all.
You got a little treasure of the Sierra Madre in there.
Yeah. I like treasure quite a bit more.
Sure, but in the sense that like these are all, the overarching plot, if you will, the movie, is just get the gold, get the gold safely back home.
But then it's how different people approach it, whether it be ethics, morals, greed comes into play.
Opportunistic,
yes. Totally different culture too. Like I was talking to Andrew about this one scene where our warrior, you know, a better title. Speaking of titles, the title that I came up with was Two Buffoons, a Princess, and a Warrior. Two Buffoons, a Princess, and a Warrior.
That's good.
I think be a little more apt. Oh. But when he's like, he gets in the
That should be the name of our show whenever Florence stops by.
That's good. Good point. Here. Who's the warrior? Avery's the warrior.
That's right.
When he gets surrounded by the enemy, and there's probably 40 of them, right? And our warrior, our protagonist, he's there and he's about to. I finally got protagonist out because I know that people are misunderstanding, but now it's coming back.
I know.
Protocol. All right. So he's dead to rights, essentially, right? He's got like 40, but then
he's surrounded.
But then like their leader is like, no, let's fight like men with sticks.
Leave it to me.
And then he wins. And then he's supposed to kill the guy that he beats. And then they let him go. And it's
well,
so
that's
different.
A more shameful end, remember?
So different from our culture.
Later on, I was like, why didn't you just kill me?
Imagine
like,
that
how
happening.
How dare you not kill me?
Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Imagine that happening.
Yeah. Hard to imagine.
No, you can't, because it's different cultures.
But I imagine that's very Japanese.
All right, we take a quick break here.
What for?
Do you want to just get the old, want to do the Amazon here?
Oh, no, I think this will be a long enough episode. We got another I got another movie. You got another movie.
You disappoint me, Brian.
I can. It's up to you.
Oh, come on. There it is. Let's take a quick little break. We'll be back in a second.
I don't know why, but okay. Time to talk about some more movies, and that's what we do here. You want to save Finding Francis for the end?
Yeah.
For the finale?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Athena, or I can briefly talk about the film that put me to sleep twice?
Yeah, do that quick so that I can wake everybody up with a little Athena talk.
It's close.
Good.
It's close.
Oh, Close. The movie Close.
The movie Close.
God,
Close.
I've been bombarded with emails for the last 6 months about Close.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to see it?
No, well, not from listeners, oh, I should God. Say, like from the studio.
Oh, and, God, I was going to say, I
from the distributor.
I have a hard time envisioning anyone being passionate about this movie to the point where they're like, you've got to see this. Close is a 2022 film written and directed by Lucas Daunt, D-H-O-N-T, starring Eden Damprin, Gustave de Wale, and Emilia Duquesne. This is a Belgian film, 91% of Rotten Tomatoes in theaters now, nominated for Best International Feature, and so I had to see it. And it was playing at my local cinema. Lucky me, they added it after the nominations came out. Mm. So I went to see it at the old AMC over there, and I was like, this is great.
People are loving this movie.
Usually I got to stream these or borrow a screener or something.
I have to see this immediately.
Shamefully, dozed off more than once.
Mm-hmm. Yay! Fairness to the film, Brian's sick some days.
That's true.
And he
was infusion day.
Yeah, was it infusion day?
No, it wasn't. No. But it was. I wish I'd been getting an infusion.
You don't care about kids though, too.
I also dislike kids. So the movie is. Oh boy, I guess it's. You would classify it as a coming of age story. Again, it's Belgian and it's spoken in French. And the idea
that's two strikes for you already.
I already have to read this goddamn movie, and I don't like the French, so I'm behind the eight ball already. Mm-hmm. And so it's two kids, they're sort of middle school age by our American standards, and the one kid is he's a little maybe effeminate, maybe a little sensitive. He's you get the sense that maybe he
power of the dog.
What
power of the dog?
And this, I guess, yeah, but I'm talking, it's about their friendship. It's about these two kids' friendship.
Oh, but that kid was like feminine. And
right, but I'm saying the one kid is sort of a little more masculine by traditional standards. Mm. You know, he's a little more
L-I-E.
Of a boy, and the other one is a little more effeminate. You get the sense that there's a world where he grows up to be an out-of-the-closet gay man. Mm-hmm. And of course, they're teased at school despite their, the movie opens with their very tender friendship. They're running in the tall grass, running in the tulips.
Yeah.
Running.
Society hasn't got at them yet.
No, they're living their best lives. They're right. Innocent. It's brotherly love in a sense. I don't think they probably have sexual urges at this age, but mm-hmm. you get the sense that they're very close and their parents kind of pick up what's going on.
What is that? What's going on?
These boys have a special bond.
Okay.
So
the parents are happy about this?
Yeah. It is fucking Belgium, man. You think they're upset?
Well, I don't know.
Come on. They're free thinkers over there.
They don't have much time other than they're so busy fixing all the windmills around town that I don't know if they have time to even pay attention to
kids. Are there a lot of windmills in Belgium?
I think so, right? Holland? Big on the windmills. Pretty sure that's where the windmills come
Netherlands.
From.
Netherlands. Anyhow, there's a lot of chocolate in Belgium. So a tragedy befalls one of the boys,
and
the rest of the movie becomes about the fallout from that, and the parents of said boy reconciling with the living boy.
How much did you miss though while you were asleep? Because you said you fell asleep twice.
No, I actually one time I kind of woke myself up by going. I don't think people appreciated that because there were probably 25 people in the theater. This was like 2 days after the nominations came out.
This is, we've seen this story before, but it's told maybe in more modern time. I mean, this is kind of, I mean, I guess with less of a sexual slant, but almost like with Grease, right? Where like, you know, he's all cool with her and like they get along well, you know, when it's just the two of them. But then as soon as the friends get involved, he's like too cool for her. I'm imagining that's what happens in this movie.
I wish there was more of that. This is just... These two boys are friends. They have an innocent love between each other. They go to school. They're teased. Tragedy befalls one of them.
Okay, so the tragedy is the turning point. Okay.
Yeah, and it's,
I got to see this movie. I got to tell you. I know you're not trying to sell it, but
you should because I a little
that was a weird noise.
That was a weird noise off the air last week. I told Anderson I'm going to do this movie that no one should see, and I described it as aggressively boring. Like they were like trying to bore us to death.
Mm.
Now you might get emails from listeners saying,
oh,
"I saw Close.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
Brian's nuts. It's really sensitive.
What about your nuts?
Brian's insane.
Oh.
It's really sensitive. It's really character study. Mm-hmm. That might all be true. I found it to be relentlessly dull.
Yeah,
okay. Really tough watch.
All right. Well, we'll see. Do you have any intentions of seeing another movie that's up for a best documentary? This one, and that is all things that breathe.
That's on HBO, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, we'll see how you do with that one.
Oh, is it tough?
I mean, there's movies that are quiet and slow. And don't get me wrong. Tone Poem, as soon as I hear Tone Poem, unless it's preceded with like a ghost story, is a tone poem. I'm out. That's the only way that I'm in.
Things happen in Ghost Story.
It's still a tone poem, right?
This is tone poem-y.
This is?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm out. Oh, yeah. I'm out.
Oh, yeah.
But Hit the Road might be considered tone. No, there's a lot going on. That kid kind of breaks up any kind of tone that's going on, whatever the poem part. All right. Yeah.
Good luck with this one.
It's that time of year where, you know, you catch up with the movies that we didn't see first time around because they didn't really appeal to us. Mm-hmm. And now like we're feeling like, okay, well, let's make sure we didn't miss anything big. Sure. And yeah.
And we're paying for it.
Close. I mean, I've been just hammered. They've been sending like links to things for months. They're big on Close. They started the campaign a long, long time ago. Obviously, they think something's there. Maybe it's because it's what's going on in the zeitgeist. I don't know. I got to not see this movie.
You should. Decision. Hey, guys, if you feel strongly about Close, please send an email to Anderson.
Please do not. I have too many emails, guys, and I'm running out of time. All right, Athena. Athena is a 20.
Out of time for what?
20. Running out of time for life, right? I got so much. 2022 film. This is available on Netflix for all of you to see. I know a number of you have already seen it because I've been getting emails about the incredible wonder that it opens up with. And this is directed by Romain Gavras. It's a French film and it's subtitled. And there is a lot going on. So it opens up with this crazy wonder that everyone's talking about. However, the movie is made up of a bunch of wonders. So it's in the same vein as Lehane. If you've seen Lehane, if you've seen Raid Redemption, it's definitely got shades of that as far as pacing and incredible camera operation and set pieces. So it opens up with a with this press conference where the cops in this part of, there's a lot of political strife going on. There's a lot of class warring going on. It's not far from like the French projects, and the police are having this.
The projects,
and the police are having this press conference with there's a large crowd around them. It's inside, or kind of half inside, half outside, and they're explaining about the death of this boy. This guy comes out. He's military fatigued. You get the general sense that he's a cop of sorts, and he says, "Yes, we're going to figure out who did this, who's responsible." Oh. He died at the hands of the cops.
I wonder if it's a crossover film with Close.
This guy is a cop. Oh, you just gave something away there.
No,
and
it's not that.
And then somebody throws a Molotov cocktail from the back. And now you got to remember this. There's a ton of people in here.
Yeah,
and
that's dangerous.
And the camera does not cut to a close up of the Molotov cocktail dropping.
Okay,
it just happens with these people in here. And then all hell breaks loose, Brian. And the camera continues to follow. And the stuff that might have been most impressive to me is the guy that threw the Molotov cocktail. He's the leader of his faction, which they all go back to the projects. They hop on this like mini, this sprinter van. Essentially, they're all hanging off the sides of it, shooting off fireworks because that's their main ammunition. Because a lot of gun laws over in France don't allow a lot of ne'er-do-wells to have guns. So the cops have guns. Even not all the cops have guns over there. I don't think either they have guns or they don't. But like you know, a lot of the time, we don't see the same kind of shootouts in French movies and a lot of movies that from countries that have gun control because it's just unplausible, right? Okay. Lehane, Hate, which is a movie that I absolutely love, Mateo Kasowitz, mid-90s. It's a very, very mid-90s black and white independent film, but it's fantastic. And those of you who have seen it, you know Vincent Cassell's in it. And the whole movie's based around a cop who lost his gun. And there's a lost cop gun in the city. And like that's the entire story is built around that. Imagine building a story around that here. It's like, there's
like, okay.
It's like finding a hay in a gun stack.
It's like finding a nickel out here. It's like, yeah.
You didn't like the hay in the gun stack?
What's that?
You didn't like the hay in the gun stack?
That's not bad.
It's not bad. I just came up with it, Brian.
That's right. A stack of guns.
You were talking about nickels. I know. But nickel's not bad either. Okay. So, yeah, the fact that this was shot in France, I can't believe that they got away with like all of the insane. There's no way these guys are harnessed on. Like that, I don't think that they could do this in the United States. So there's a guy just popping mad wheelies on a motorcycle who's part of the team. So ultimately, what happens is, and I think that the story, which is very simple but it's great too, is getting lost in this. So they go back to the projects, and it turns out that there were four brothers, and the youngest one died at the hands of the cops, did he? Was it a setup to further inflame the political unrest and the class wars going on? between the cops and the
kids in the Les Projects.
Yes, in the Les Projects. And then they got another brother who's in there, who's just an opportunist and sells drugs, and he's afraid of all this fucking up his game.
Sure.
And then the other guy is leading the faction. Like, he's the one who threw the Molotov cocktail really close to his brother, who's a cop. So we got these, like, it's like a
three warring factions.
Triple war. It's like, can you call a civil war if there's three sides?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a civil war with three separate sides with different
Shiites
interests.
The Sunnis and the Muslims.
And I just the story alone could have worked in a regular film, but this is just so action heavy. And there's a whole 37-minute making of Athena as well on Netflix, which that shot that I was talking about, the opening scene, and they're all hanging off the sprinter and the guys popping the mad wheelies and things are being thrown at them when they get back to the projects. And it ends with a drone shot, which you imagine is a drone shot. The camera comes out of the sprinter and it goes up into the sky. No. They, along the lines, realized that it'd be too much of a hassle, or it would be too shaky if they were to, like, you know, have to attach it to a drone that they could trust. So they actually have a guy, a camera operator, is holding it, and they have them on wire ties, and they just suck them up into the sky.
Wow.
So I think that the actual execution of this movie is kind of eclipsing the story as well, because I really like the story as well, and the characters were all very, very good. And
was it relatable as a ignorant American?
I mean, if you like watching cops, get it. Yeah, it's great, and I think it's relatable for sure. It's a lot of it. I think this was born out of the protests that are happening all around the world. In fact, and this is how. So it's very, very visually appealing. If anything, they're showing off a little bit, and it was almost distracting with all of the visual appealing.
It can get a little overwhelming.
With the one side being armed with nothing but fireworks, you know, a lot of that happens at night. So there's just like roaming candles just being shot incessantly. And it's like, okay, I get it. It's pretty, though, you know, even though it's war and whatnot. But it's definitely worth a watch. Strap in, because it's quite the ride. And there's so much going on that. You know, remember when Lucas was talking about how Phantom Menace was going to have just so much going on the screen?
Right.
This is what he should have been talking
about. This actually
about.
Has a lot going on.
Yeah, this really does.
Just because you've made a world that doesn't exist doesn't mean there's actually a lot going on.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just because you have some storyboard, all right, some cartoonists that are drawing on every cell in the corners.
Oh, look, it's an outer space city. Great.
Oh, look, there's a guy riding some kind of lizard.
Dude, I watched
in the bottom corner. Why would you do that?
I told you. Tessa was watching it.
Dude, that's a bad parenting.
It's such a wretched movie.
Bad, bad parenting. There's one good scene.
You saw it for the first time.
One good scene.
Sorry to interrupt.
Was it Mighty Ducks? So do we.
Episode 3. Revenge of the Sith. I told her.
She's a little too young for that.
I told her it was too scary. She's like, Daddy, I'm not going to be scared.
Was she?
Let's do it. No, she wasn't.
You watch her face when he was getting hammered?
She kept asking when they were going to fight in the lava.
Oh, yeah?
She's like, when are they going to fight? Mm-hmm. Like, soon, Tessa, don't worry.
What do we see that was? Oh, did she brag at all after watching that scene?
No.
Did she feel like she was like a big girl?
I think she might have. Yeah, she didn't brag actively, but I could tell she was proud of herself.
Because I might have to do this with Atticus soon, and if he brags, I'll be like, "Oh, okay, you feel like that? You could handle that." All right, it's time to watch the end of The Northman.
That's quite a jump.
But I mean, it's lava fighting sequence. It's almost shot for shot, very similar. Just one's hard R, one's
the end of The Northman.
I mean, it's literally fighting next to lava, just like the two of these.
Hasn't he been to where the Northman was shot?
Some of it was shot, but not enough for my taste. But yeah, he's been to the old Iceland. Iceland.
The land of
ice. It occurred to me the other day. Iceland? You take the C and replace it with an R? Ireland.
Ireland.
Just like that.
Oh.
Look at that.
They're one letter apart.
One letter apart. All right, let's get into our last pick. This one's brought to us by Stephen Morris. Stephen Morris has been a subscriber to the program for quite some time. He's the one who had us watch Villains not too long ago. He also had us do Top 5 GIFs.
Okay.
If you recall that one.
Nope.
You don't?
No, of course.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was a good episode.
And here he pitched, and he said, tell me what you think about this. It's feature length. Mm. Standalone for the most part, documentary style from this television series called Nathan For You. Now, were you familiar with Nathan Fielder?
Yes, vaguely. I didn't watch it at the time, but of course I knew about it.
Why would you say of course?
Because Comedy Central was promoting it pretty hard back then.
Okay, so now it's on HBO Max. If you would like to watch After we talk about it, hopefully you will want to watch it, because that's the point of this program, is to point out some good things that maybe you otherwise would have missed. This is a good one to you can watch. I sign off on watch. I had seen one Nathan For You before this one, and I didn't go crazy with my OCD and say I got to watch every single one. You don't need to see. You need to be somewhat familiar with Nathan, I think.
Yeah, it probably helps if you're familiar with his sort of general vibe, his neuroses, his what he does. But this stands alone.
It's and hard to describe what he does, too.
He does a decent job of recapping, too, because like the guy was involved earlier in the series, and he kind of recaps that. So I felt oriented.
Yeah. So why don't you take it from there?
Finding Francis is the title episode. It is the series finale, like Anderson said, of Nathan For You. 2017, I'm going to call it a documentary. I'm going to sneeze here at some point. Directed by...
Please don't.
Nathan Fielder.
Please don't sneeze.
Sorry, buddy.
Bless you.
Directed by Nathan Fielder, the titular Nathan Fielder of Nathan For You. All right. 84 minutes long. This is not a serious time commitment. Anderson, this was named to the best episodes, best TV episodes of the year, a list by the New York Times, The Ringer, and Vox. Like I mentioned, the series finale, and it centers around, I don't know why they spent so much time on this. It was neither here nor there for me, but I guess you would call him a part-time actor out here in Los Angeles, a man of advancing age who was a Bill Gates impersonator on a previous episode. And they get to know this very curious man who hangs around the offices. He just kind of shows up.
Well, yeah. Okay, so...
You got a cat outside.
It's outside, and cats live outside sometimes. Right. They were doing another episode, which they refer to what Brian's talking about. And I guess this kind of this guy, Bill, kind of inserted himself into their episode and was an odd character.
His real name is Bill.
And they liked him so much. And I guess they had such response from this guy's small part in that episode. They brought him in to do a voiceover, if you recall. Like to do a...
Yes, yes.
What do you call it? I did one for groupers. I sit down commentary for an episode.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And
yes,
during that time when they had him in the studio doing this voiceover commentary for his episode, he started talking about one particular thing quite a bit, which was the one that got away. Love of his life, Francis.
That's right. Left her back in his hometown of Little Rock, Arkansas, to come out to L.A. to chase the spotlight.
And at some point, they invited him to just come hang around the studio whenever he wanted, which was a weird move, but they had footage. I don't know how much of this is cooked. There is some stuff that's cooked.
I don't know how much he was invited or how much he showed up on his own. Hard to say.
But as far as cooked goes, I get the sense that 80% of this was 100% real.
Yeah, I get the sense too. I mean, they set up elaborate bits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Within the production.
So this guy's an elderly gentleman, like Brian said. He's definitely a character. He came out to LA long, long ago to make it as an actor. I don't know why he didn't leave, because I don't think he made it as an actor. They don't really go into what he was doing to earn his keep. I don't know what he was doing. But he's very, very, got great expressions. He wears his heart on his sleeve, but he's a narcissist and he's got delusions of grandeur. And this 80 plus year old man really thinks that he's going to find this woman, Frances, from like soon after high school, you get the sense, like late teens, early 20s.
Oh yeah. I think they were probably met in high school.
I think 57 years was how long it had been or something along those lines. And
27 years since she graduated, but you got the sense that they knew each other in high school. He was familiar with the high school she went to. She went to a different high school in a different city.
Yeah, so Nathan looks into it for him a little bit and says, yeah, you know what? I can't find her. And I don't even know if she's on Facebook. She probably changed her name since then. It's a much different world. Yeah, so then he says, you know what? Nathan says, I've decided to use the resources of my show and Comedy Central to find this woman for you. So that's where it all kind of begins. And
here comes a road trip buddy comedy.
It's fascinating and it keeps you engaged. And I kept thinking, like, this could just be its own document. I wish this had nothing to do with the show and Nathan just took the story and made a documentary, because I think it kind of got lost as being, you know, the season series finale of this show.
I would never have any perception of this.
This could be a narrative. This could be a written scripted narrative, how this goes down. And
could be, but I appreciated the way it unfolded. You're right. It could be, but I appreciated the way it unfolded as a, I'll just call it a documentary, pseudo documentary, whatever you want to call it. So they travel to Little Rock and they start digging. And again, you don't know how much of this is cooked, or I got the sense that they would have had to have had some kind of lead or something in order to get them to go to Little Rock? They wouldn't just show up for no reason.
Well, that's where they're from. Like,
I know, but I'm saying
Bill and Francis, who's this woman that he's looking for.
That's a hard sell to the production team. If you're like, hey, we got nothing. We're going to travel out to Little Rock.
Oh, so you think that they set up Mud 2 before they went out there? Is that what you're getting at?
I think they had a few threads that could pull.
For sure. Yeah. They're not going to go out there and just kind of roam around. So their whole thing was like they were trying to get access to yearbooks at this high school, but they weren't allowed on. So they said, you know what? We'll circumvent. Turns out Mud was shot in and around here. So right.
They're very proud.
And we're from LA.
The town is very proud of the fact that Matthew McConaughey's Mud was shot in the town.
So they pitched them on the idea of shooting Mud 2 and their location
Mud
scouting.
Mud 2, Never Clean.
Never Clean. It's the dirtier
it's
of the two movies. and lo and behold, they get access to so little bits like that along the way. There's a very charismatic.
I had a good laugh over Mud too. Never Clean.
Very charismatic escort who's brought into the scene. She's definitely. I don't think she's an actress. I tried to figure that out. I still have not been able to figure that out because she's not even credited on the IMDb for whatever reason. But they brought her in. I'm fairly certain just to make Nathan the butt of some jokes. Otherwise, sure, he would have been punching down with Bill being such a character and right, exposing Bill for all of his weaknesses. Because like I said,
it was the only storyline that Nathan had.
Yeah, he didn't really... Well, he could have just been helping Bill,
he was
right?
Superfluous otherwise.
But they brought in this escort, mm-hmm, a female escort, to help Bill, like, you know, go back and forth and be able to talk to ladies again. And then Nathan ends up falling in love with her, which is, it's all kind of silly. It doesn't really fit the rest of the movie, even though she was great. She made up for it because she was fantastic. And she also, you know, by the end of the movie,
Macy.
Yeah, she was fantastic. But then there's some really, really eye-opening, interesting stuff. Like when they get the actress to play Francis, to do some role playing, and then they do the reverse, like, and he's seen in real time, like, oh yeah, I am kind of a creep. Oh yeah, I am kind of weird.
And Bill was clearly leaning in, you know what I mean, that interplay, sort of stage thing. It was a hyper realized version of himself. I don't believe that's what Bill would have done had he encountered Francis.
No, but he was set up in a scenario where he could do that for the cameras and do that on stage. But Nathan interjecting and saying, why'd you just touch her knee there? It was so uncomfortable and fascinating. I really, really liked this.
I enjoyed the age progression.
The age progression was hilarious. So it's really silly and very, very funny, but then also very poignant. Yeah. And it talk about tone shifting. This one also tone shifts, but it's not quite as jarring, I would say, as the Hidden Fortress.
At one point, Nathan is trying to find classmates of Francis who might still be in the area. And of course, given their age and everything and life, what happens, there's not that many left. But he announces a 57-year high school reunion. Needlessly elaborate.
Do you think, I feel like that was probably somewhat cooked. That's another thing. It was almost distracting trying to figure
actors.
Out.
Those people were not
actors. They weren't actors, but they could have said, hey, you want to be paid to, like, you know, come have a free dinner and be on camera and, you know, kibitz. Like,
yeah, they would have.
Could they have gotten that many people for a 57?
They would have had a sweet in the pot somehow.
I think so.
Yeah.
I thought the whole thing was going to be no one showed up, which would have been funny unto itself. But then, you know, people started trickling in.
A dozen people showed up.
Yeah.
There's some, I got to be honest with you, Anderson, thinking about, you know, I'm in the middle of shooting my own documentary about myself. And I got to be honest. This was a movie that I was watching. I'm like, yeah, this is what I'm going for in my
own
movie.
You needed Nathan though.
Well, not so specific to Nathan, but to the point you just articulated, which is there are parts that are silly and kind of crazy and absurd, but then there's parts that are like legitimately poignant.
Yeah.
Like, and that is a tough balancing act. We talked on this episode about how tough it is to manage tone like that.
I think the best comedians, especially working today, are really, really good at taking it back and forth like that.
It's hard to do, but yeah, you're right. Right.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Stephen Morris.
This is an eye-opening experience. Thanks, Stephen. Stephen, right?
Yeah, Stephen Morris. And it was good stuff.
I enjoyed.
Young Love and Old Love was kind of what they were getting at. And both were awkward. Both were uncomfortable.
For different reasons.
Can't talk about the end, but there's a phone scene. And Brian knows, anyone who's seen this knows exactly what I'm talking about, where Bill's on the phone.
Oh, yeah. They're extended.
It's very uncomfortable, but in the best possible way. And he is so expressive, this Bill character, reacting to things that he's hearing on the phone and him looking over at Nathan as these things are happening. That's something that will never leave my head. In fact, I felt myself kind of making some of those faces and I'm like, who am I channeling right now? Oh, that's Bill. I'm doing a little bill. It's one of those things where like 10 years from now, I'm going to make a face. I'm going to be, that's something. I don't know what that is.
What is that?
Yeah. Like he's in here. And then, well, I don't know if
we're
going to
ask our listeners in 10 years, like, well, there's a movie there where the guy talks on the phone in the car.
Yeah. 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 People, and hopefully people will come through like they did with, oh no, I forgot again.
No, it was that teeth. Teeth, right?
Teeth.
Yes. Well, the weird guy. Yeah. The very lascivious look.
Bill could have been teeth.
No.
Oh, he could have. He's an actor. Don't forget.
It was weird how more than once Bill was like on the phone with someone and was like, who do you think it is?
Yeah.
Or how do they know? How on earth do they know?
That's the narcissism, man. He thinks that's that like point. He's, it really is a character study. And I didn't realize it was until halfway through the movie. I'm like, oh.
All about Bill.
I'm learning about some. That, you know what it was too? And I was talking with Steven about this when we did our little chat up. What's really, most people of Bill's progressed age at least have a support system around them. Most of them have a family, at least a wife who keeps them in check
sure.
a bit. And this is what happens when someone's just completely unchecked, untethered, and they just let their narcissism just completely get away from them.
I hope to get there someday.
You got to ditch the family, man.
I know, seriously.
Ditch me, because I'm constantly bringing you down.
I was going to say, this is the worst thing to happen to me. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay, is that it?
Or yeah, that's
music?
It.
Nice. Thanks, Stephen Morris, for finding Frances. Thanks to...
he found her?
No, for bringing us, Francis. Sorry if I'm a photoshop.
I was making a joke, Brian. It didn't land with you, I guess.
Avery, put the names by the titles. The Hidden Fortress is brought to us by...
It's Andrew Martin.
Right? Andrew Martin. Thank you very much. There's a lot of things going on, man. I can't remember names.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time with that. I think it's well established.
Mm-hmm.
Anderson and Brian is the website. That's where you go to find information about Big Dudes Rue. They are a featured artist this week. Check them out. They're hearing them right now. So if you like them, go find out more at AndersonandBrian.com. AndersonandBrian.com is a website where the Amazon banner exists. If you're doing shopping on Amazon, tap that banner and it'll cost you nothing and it'll help the show. That's a really nice thing to do. Anderson and Brian is the Instagram. Anderson and Brian is the TikTok.
TikTok.
Film Vault on Facebook, Film Vault on Twitter, Film Vault, the Film Vault podcast on YouTube.
Yes.
Thank you, all of our Patreon listeners. We appreciate you and all you bring to the show. Thank you, Giovanni, Mitch Burns, Mike Cole, and Eric Kath. I feel like I'm surrounded by a living like Addie's Antique Boutique.
Yeah, there's a lot of it around here.
There's a lot of it going on. I'm just going to start taking stuff. Just slip it in my pockets.
Go ahead.
So check
I need more
that
space
out
to work in
That's
my kitchen.
That's true. I need more space. Addie's Antiques is on Facebook. Invade the Decade will not be mentioned because Avery didn't see fit to show up. And until next time,
we do it for Van Gogh.
Life and death and life again. This land is your land. Poison, seething with the black breath of industry. Seeing stars through a haze.